It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper? A woohooer, a hand clapper, a high fiver. I kind of like the high five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At chumbacasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses. So don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. VGW. Void or prohibited
by law. See terms and conditions 18 plus. Oh, damn, look at you! Before we continue my first ever journey through the Harry Potter series, just a few quick announcements. First, it is the first episode in January, meaning that it is donation time. Here at Potterless, we donate $1 for every patron that we have over at our team at patreon.com/potterless. And at the time of recording, we have 642 patrons, meaning that we are giving $642 to Hope for the Day. Hope for the Day is a charity that through outreach, education, and action is trying to break the silence around mental health, because suicide completion rates have surged to a 30-year high. I get a lot of messages saying that Potterless has helped people through tough times, but a funny podcast can't always be enough. So Hope for the Day is a great charity. Their message that they're trying to spread is that it's okay not to be okay. They're raising awareness, support, education, all these other great things. Shout out to listener Lorelai, who suggested this charity to us. And if you want to learn more about Hope for the Day and the amazing work that they're doing, you can go to hftd.org. In live show news, grab your weatherproof North Face, because Potterless is coming to the Pacific Northwest in winter. I'll be part of the Multitude live shows on January 17th and 18th, and I'll be on two panels at PodCon if you're going to be there. And then February 17th, Potterless will be doing a live show as part of Portland's Listen Up Festival. If you want to get tickets and find out more information about all of these shows, you can go to multitude.productions/live. And while you're at multitude.productions, why don't you check out some of the other Multitude shows? There are so many other great podcasts, and there's resources if you want to learn how to start your own show. So that is all available at multitude.productions. Also, a few weeks ago, Potterless passed 10 million total downloads, which is ridiculous. I cannot thank all of you enough for listening to the show, for telling your friends and family about the show, for supporting the show on Patreon. It is so much. 10 million downloads is nuts. I cannot believe it, and I'm just excited to see where this podcast can go in the future. And speaking of wonderful things, we have new patrons, so welcome to the team! So shout out to Mia Gray, Barry Brooks, Bree Contreras, Laura Gold, Apen, Zoe, Lauren Pruner, Andrew Wyatt, Andrew Hussey, Ingvild Bullerengen, Anthony Charlier, Warren McKnight, Naaman Loss, Tyler Naki, Elikoi Vamaki, Sophie Morajim, King Ecclesias, Amy Barnard, Sam Jackson, Gemma Wilds, Haley Edwards, Martin Farrow, Karen M, Sierra Gavin, Kaylee Scott, Lauren Cook, James Andre, Sarah Shedder, and Brody Lowers. A pronunciation correction for Luisa Del Giudice, and I'm sorry if I messed that up again. Shout out to Georgia Davis, Emma Forzelius, Megan Kirby, and WizardToaster85, who all upgraded their pledges, and a huge shout out to our newest producer level patrons, Harper Caldwell, Liz Bigelow, Maria Noah, Brandon Pickens, Vittorio Nicoletta, and Sarah Enslin. They join the ranks of Leanne, Vicky, Aaron, Erica, Calvin, Sadie, Jesse, Natalie, Deborah, Clow, Alex, Frank, Marchismo, Tori, Samantha, Juan, Jenna, Kieran, Rebecca, Abid, Caitlin, Rosemary, Jill, Marie, Lisa, Ariel, Romina, Kumail, Anthony, Russell, Dustin, Katie, Audra, Indiana, Eleanor, Sydney, Billy, Rossanne, Micah, Andrea, Nikita, Colette, Chrissy, Shrina, Lala, Chelsea, Taylor, Lovkesh, Ali, Cassandra, Roxy, Amelia, Sean, Jeremiah, Maya, Sarah, Jesus, Ben, Rachel, Zachary, Jessica, Natalie, Arna, Branny, Melody, Kristen, Zach, Elisa, Tiago, Daisy, Jessica, Orchid, Jonathan, Joe, Isabel, Steve, Vivian, Samuel, Victoria, Elena, Takari, Darlene, Drake, James, Haley, Marino, Moster, Hannah, Angelina, Ross, Marie, Peter, Maria, Phineas, Natalie, Hermione, Victoria, Lee, Alex, Brian, Caitlin, Cecily, Raul, Finn, Mosine, Grace, Sammy, Raul, Ingen, Mari, Brianne, Heidi, Alexandra, John, Jen, Sephron, Dusty, Noel, Tau, Hala, Emily, Michael, Robin, Rebecca, Patricia, Jane, Will, Neil, and Can't I Potter? Who never burn their toast, they always turn the knob to the exact right setting. If you want to be like one of these amazing patrons and get access to bonus content, exclusive merchandise, director's commentary, you can head to patreon.com/potterless. But without further ado, let's get into episode 59 of Potterless, covering chapters 3 and 4 of Harry Potter and the Deathly Hallows, guest starring Multitude's own Amanda McLaughlin. And welcome back to another episode of Potterless, the tale of a 26-year-old man reading the Harry Potter series for the very first time. My name is Mike Schubert. I am that 26-year-old man, and I am joined again by my pod mom, Amanda McLaughlin. Amanda, how's it going?
I am great. How are you, Shubes?
Oh, I'm just dandy. I'm ready to continue our journey through Deathly Hallows, which I have quickly learned is not wasting any time into serious stuff happening because... They're not kidding around.
The Hallows are getting more deathly by the chapter.
Yeah. I don't even know what the Deathly Hallows are, but I'm getting the vibe that they're going to live up to their name, whatever they
are. Listen, so last episode, I made you pause before chapter one to talk about the epigraph. Mm-hmm. In this episode, I'm going to make us pause to study the illustration by Mary Graham Prey.
Okay.
That opens up chapter three.
Which J.K. Rowling says are not canon, but I'm still down to check it out.
They are the mental image of Harry Potter I had growing up because I started reading like a hipster before the movies came out. Mm-hmm. But anyway, so let's just look at that image. Tell me if you ever would have predicted that Dudley and Harry would touch body parts voluntarily that wasn't like Dudley sitting on Harry.
It was surprising.
Yes.
That is basically the big reveal in this chapter is that Dudley has had a redemption arc and shakes Harry's hand.
The illustration for those who are listening to the audiobook or ebook is that it's Dudley and Harry, who's wearing pajamas inexplicably, shaking hands in, I guess, the front of Privet Drive. But it was just very funny to me because it says the Dursleys departing and it shows Dudley and Harry smiling and shaking hands. And there is like a lot more conflict, including the first line of the chapter being "Oi, you," than I would have expected from that framing. But like, again, Deathly Hallows, shit is different. We are not messing around.
No,
the Dursleys
not.
Are actually leaving. They are actually having some kind of closure. Like, here we are.
Yeah, and this goes back, I've complained about this before, but specifically I did in the sixth book for the chapter that's called The Flight of the Prince, and then it has a picture of Snape. I don't like when the drawings give away plot twists, and
yeah.
This gave away a plot twist, which you get to the very end of chapter three, and you learn Dudley actually likes Harry, or at least is appreciative of him for saving his life from the Dementor attack, and this would have been way better if I didn't start this chapter knowing, oh, Dudley's gonna be nice. Not to dunk on Mary Grandpré, but I don't like when the drawings do this.
Right.
I like when they make you kind of think. It's okay if it's a plot twist that doesn't convey a lot. Like for chapter two, it was Harry looking into the little mirror thing.
Right.
And that's fine because you can't really infer anything. But you see Harry and Dudley looking happy, shaking hands. You know that they're going to make amends. And that's the, so to speak, reveal of this chapter, which I get is not the most significant thing. The Flight of the Prince one was way more criminal in my eyes.
Yeah.
But I don't know. I don't like it. It's not fun. I wanted to kind of have that, oh, wow, when I was reading the whole time, just kind of going, all right, when's Dudley going to be nice? It wasn't as much fun.
Yeah. Well, we do get to start with some good old-fashioned Dursley Burns, where, Vernon yells, oi, you, at Harry, where he is completely nonplussed to hear it because he has been addressed thus for 16 years.
Yep. So Harry's beckoned by Vernon in this classic customary way. And just before Harry walks down, he looks at the mirror again and thinks again that he thought that he sees Dumbledore's blue eye in the mirror, but then also has to tell himself, like he did last chapter, no, you're making it up. Which, clearly Harry wants to talk to Dumbledore, and I've brought this up in the past. I don't know if Harry's actually going to go to Hogwarts or not in this book. It's up in the air. I hope he does, because I want him to talk to the damn Dumbledore painting. It seems like a very obvious choice. And I'm surprised Harry's not had this thought or realization, even though he saw the painting when he was in McGonagall's now office.
Yeah, Harry does not make connections, you know, between things that are very common for wizards and that other wizards might assume that you will do right away.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, stuff that we are like, oh, wait, there's this magical thing that could actually help you solve your problem. But yeah, like it also surprised me that they restated this exact plot thing that is like literally opposite the start of this chapter on the other page. Like, yeah, I get it. I just read it. Unlike this podcast, there was not a week-long break in between the plot twist.
It was literally a page.
I know. That's another just little like dispatch from fandom is that there have been some fanfics that think really deeply about like how much of a person is captured in a portrait and like what that portrait magic
is
like.
It's strange. They have emotions.
Exactly.
Because the fat lady cried her eyes out when she found out Dumbledore was dead.
Yeah, it's a cool part of like the lore of the magic of Harry Potter that is not completely fleshed out in the books and like most parts of the magical system is left to the fans to like do interesting stuff with later.
Totally. This again is something I would probably ask J.K. Rowling. If I do get an interview with her at any point in my life, I will have the most bonkers questions. She will walk out of that interview so confused because I will not be asking anything of importance. It will be very, very silly things like this. So Harry is asked to sit in front of the Dursleys and this is the first time, 1 for 7, Petunia is not described as horse face. She did it. She's not described as horse face.
She's graduated to an actual person.
Yeah. She's not just like this, hey, Petunia's ugly and we don't like her because the Dursleys are written to dunk on people that J.K. Rowling didn't like, you know, her Privet, someone whose name was Privet back from her schooling days. So it's just the constant need to be like, they're fat, they're ugly, Petunia looks like a horse, meh, 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 meh. This is the first time she wasn't described as such. So you did it, Petunia. You did it. So Vernon asks Harry to sit in front of all of them. And the first thing that Vernon says is, it's a lot of claptrap, which brings us to a fan favorite segment of Potterless, British Quandaries with UK correspondent Dottie James.
Yes!
And now it is time for British Quandaries with UK correspondent Dottie James.
It is always very embarrassing when I have to myself Google the British words because I don't know what they mean. But a claptrap, it's just nonsense. It is just nonsensical words said without meaning. Great. That's what a claptrap is.
This has been British Quandaries with UK correspondent Dottie James. Wow, look at that. Claptrap. We've learned whether or not people actually say this in the UK.
Never actually knew. Amazing.
So what we learn is that the plan was for the Dursleys to go away to avoid a potential Death Eater attack. And Vernon has been wavering back and forth a lot on this decision. But Vernon has now decided that it's all a bunch of BS and they are going to stay. Vernon says that he thinks it's all a scam for Harry Potter to take over the house. And Harry's like, the house? What house? And Vernon says, this house. And Harry hits him with, are you actually as stupid as you look?
Yikes.
Ugh, brutal by Harry Potter there, but very funny.
Harry also knows that it's book 7 and gives no fucks.
Yeah, he's, I don't have time for this. There are more important things to discuss. He then goes on to say, I've already got a house. My godfather left me one. So why would I want this one? All the happy memories? Which is very funny. Harry is getting very good at making fun of the Dursleys. He has to explain to Vernon again, and really to the reader is why this is written this way. He has to explain that he has been told by Harry Potter, Arthur, and Kingsley Shacklebolt that once Harry turns 17, the charm is over, so Voldemort is going to try to attack, and he might want to attack the Dursleys and torture them to try to find out where Harry has gone to. So it's doing it for his protection. The order offers to hide them and protect them. And Vernon asks, well, what about the ministry? Isn't there some sort of government that you guys have? And Harry says, yes, but they can't be trusted. We think the Death Eaters have infiltrated.
Yeah, I just love that Vernon is thinking about house prices when Harry is like, your literal lives are on the line.
Mm-hmm. There are far more important things at stake than the real estate market. So Vernon asks why they can't have Kingsley watch over them. And Harry says, because he's protecting the Muggle Prime Minister, and Vernon says, yeah, he's the best. I want him. Harry just goes, well, he's taken. Harry says that Hestia Jones and Daedalus Diggle are more than up to the job. And I'm sorry, this dude's name is Daedalus Diggle?
It is.
For real?
It is.
Daedalus Diggle. Ugh, gosh. Not only is it alliteration, but it's an absurd sounding name for an absurd wizard, as we soon learn. And Vernon does have a funny line there where he says, if we'd even seen some CVs, he just wants the resumes of these people that are going to be looking over him.
You also skipped over, in my opinion, the best line of this book so far. Ooh, which is that the Dursleys had never seen Kingsley with his earring in, where, like, I'm sure it's been revealed before that Kingsley has an earring, but just that little nod to me is like, oh, Kingsley, legend, absolute unit. Like, I love this guy.
Mm-hmm. I love Kingsley a lot. He is great. He is, I think, my favorite order member that is not, you know, one of the kids. So Harry warns Vernon that Voldemort is behind the rampant disappearances and deaths and says that the number of Dementors that exist might be in the thousands because they feed off of fear and despair, which this is terrifying. This, where did they all live? Where did they go? I'm surprised that there weren't any Dementors in the last book.
I know.
I'm scared.
I assume that it's something about, like, obviously the Death Eaters were involved in, like, making the Dementors breed, as Misha Stanton and you famously described.
Yep.
But it is wild to me that these could just be, like, out and about as creatures. Like, every other chaotic or dangerous magical creature is put in the Forbidden Forest or regulated or, like, you know, excoriated, like the Boggarts. Like, if you find a Boggart, you get rid of it. That's just how it works.
Mm-hmm.
So the fact that, like, the Dementors are just, like, around making wartime and the most awful time a society could endure even worse is, again, like, raising the freaking stakes here. Chapter 3, like, it is off.
And it's a powerful type of evil and a great bad guy accomplice henchman to have if you're Voldemort, because it's just as Voldemort becomes more powerful, more fear and despair covers the land, and then more Dementors breed, and there's just more and more of them. It seems like a beautiful problem to have. It's like a sick power-up that just really works in Voldemort's favor.
Yeah.
So Vernon asks, what's going to happen with my work? What about Dudley's school? And this is where Harry shouts at him, don't you understand? They will torture and kill you like they did my parents. And this is a very fun interaction where you've got a 16-year-old kid having much more of a grip on the situation than this grown-ass man and kind of lecturing an adult, even though he's, you know, a snot-nosed teenager, but he actually understands it. You can't really blame Vernon because he's never seen Voldemort or had any sort of witness to him, and he has to take to heart what Harry is saying, and he doesn't really respect Harry at all. So I can kind of get it, but you would think that with the way in which people have described Voldemort, that Vernon might be more scared than he is and a little less defiant.
Well, it's why I'm glad we have Hestia here in the scene as well, because she is like the actual voice of reason, being like, the fuck? Like, are these people actually talking to you, Harry Potter, that way? It doesn't particularly land with the Dursleys, but I'm glad that at least Harry, you know, has the satisfaction of hearing somebody validate the fact that, like, the way the Dursleys treat him is completely at odds with how a person should treat any other person, much less someone who is, like, the most famous person in Wizarding society.
Exactly. So when Harry mentions the maybe 1,000 Dementors that exist, this really tugs at the heartstrings of Dudley, who had a very bad run-in with Dementors, and this causes Dudley to say that he wants to go with the Order to be safe. And Harry turns to him and says, Dudley, for the first time in your life, you're talking sense.
Yep.
Harry's killing it. I'm really enjoying Harry this chapter. Yep. So then Daedalus and Hestia show up at the door, and Daedalus is described as wearing a mauve top hat, which is the way better version of the green bowler.
Oh, yeah.
Mauve top hat is awesome. It's like the complete opposite end of the cool spectrum.
It is excellent.
So Daedalus is very overzealous about this job. He's ready to go. He's very excited. It gives me the impression that he is either a very new member of the Order, or he's someone that doesn't get a lot of responsibility, so he's really excited to have task. It's kind of like a Gabe from The Office situation, where he's very excited to be, quote, the toilet of Saber, where he, like, people come to me with their problem, and, you know, just being really proud of what seems like a shitty job.
I read him as just being very good with people, because he is very sweet and enthusiastic and wants to give the Dursleys a good send-off, and probably understands the fact that they, you know, like, any regular reasonable person would be, you know, quite scared about going off into the unknown this way. And I loved his line where he's talking to Vernon, made sure that Vernon can drive, which as a suburbanite, Vernon is flabbergasted that someone asked him that. And then Daedalus goes, very clever of you, sir, very clever. I personally would be utterly bamboozled by all those buttons and knobs, which I just thought it was so sweet. It was so sweet.
He tries to use it as a way to flatter Vernon, but it kind of backfires because Vernon takes it as a justification for not trusting him. He mutters to himself, but this guy can't even drive.
Able to drive is queer culture. So I definitely think that Vernon can take his opinions and shove off.
I mean, it's also New York City culture where you live, and I live by the time this episode is being released, where, you know, you just walk and take the subway, and a lot of people don't have driver's licenses, and you just don't have to worry about it because driving in New York sounds like the worst thing ever. I hope that I never have to do it. Hey, this is Editing Mike. Just a quick editor's note that since recording, I did have to drive in New York, and it was terrible.
Not needing to drive is a feature, not a bug. Fight me, Vernon Dursley.
Yeah. Oh, public transportation is the best. When I lived in Paris, it was all train everything. And you just walk so much more. I think when I was in Paris, I averaged like 6 miles a day. Even just, you know, during the week, I would just only be walking to work or stand up or doing whatever I was doing. And then on the weekends, I'd travel and stuff. But when you average that much more walking, oh, you can justify so many more dessert runs because you're like, oh, come on, I walked 6 miles today. I can get ice cream, or, you know, I can have this brownie. It's no problem. Whereas now I have days in Seattle where I will walk less than a mile. Like today, I have gotten up, watched the World Cup, made food, read 4 chapters of Harry Potter, recorded 2 Potterless episodes, then I'm going to cook a big dinner that I'm going to take for lunch the next couple days and probably work on more Potterless because I have the episode coming out Monday. I haven't taken a lot of steps. It's good in New York that you get the excuse.
It's easier to justify a life as a sedentary nerd, as I am, when at least you have to walk a couple miles to and from work and home every day.
Especially if you live in a walk-up. Like Kelly's in a 6-floor walk-up, so anytime I visit her, it's like, okay, I did my leg workout for the day because I've done, you know, 50-something lunges, so to speak.
That is very real.
So the plan is for Daedalus and Hestia to get the Dursleys to drive about 10 miles away, and then they will disapparate. They're doing this so that there's no sort of tracking of disapparation happening where Harry is, because then the Death Eaters might know that things are getting moved into action. Also, this prevents Harry from getting mistakenly arrested for misuse of magic if they think it was Harry that did the charm. And I find it strange at first. My first thought was, is this really something the Ministry is going to care about with the war going on? I feel like his justification should not have been, oh, he might be arrested by the Ministry. It would have made more sense if he said, well, you know, the Death Eaters might want to attack you. I don't know if he knows this or realizes this or whatever. I just thought it was kind of funny that the big concern is that he's going to get arrested. I really don't think that's going to be on the Ministry's mind.
So, I mean, I think a few options, like they may have wanted not to alarm Harry.
Okay.
He may have wanted not to alarm the Dursleys, which if they were an average family, they probably would have been like, you know, very worried about their foster son/nephew.
Yeah. I guess the justification of, oh, Harry might get arrested sounds a little bit better than, oh, Satan might murder Harry if we do this.
Yeah.
It might just be like a nicer way to explain the situation, but have severity.
We're still working on like wizards are real, magic is dangerous, etc.
Yeah. They're at step one. They can't really come to grips with, oh, Harry's life is on the line here. Daedalus tells Harry that the original plan of side apparition with Mad-Eye, it has changed, and when Mad-Eye comes, he will explain what the new plan is and why they had to abandon the old plan. Vernon says, well, this is goodbye then, boy, and goes in for a handshake, but then can't come to grips with shaking Harry's hand, so he moves his hand away and swings it like a grandfather clock second, and just it's a very awkward thing, and I don't get why he couldn't even shake the boy's hand.
I don't know.
It's ridiculous. But Dudley is a lot better than Vernon. Dudley asks Harry why he isn't coming, and Vernon says, oh, well, Harry doesn't want to, and then turns Harry and goes, you don't want to, do you? Like, checking in. Harry replies, not in the slightest, which is great. Dudley asks where Harry is going to go. Vernon says that he will go with some of their lot, which Hestia takes offense to. Oh, their lot? Come on, blah, 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 blah. Harry says, no, don't worry about it. It's no big deal. They just think that I'm a waste of space. And Dudley chimes in, saying that he doesn't think Harry is a waste of space. And I found it interesting that we are taking all this time to have a redemption arc for Diddykins, but as it went on a little bit farther, I actually found it to be really sweet. At first, I was thinking, this is unnecessary. Why are we doing this? But then as it went on a little bit more, I actually really liked it and found it really sweet and heartfelt.
And just how, like, last chapter, you know, it took learning more about Dumbledore for Harry to realize that he never, like, asked Dumbledore a question that didn't relate to his own, you know, mortal peril, which, you know, is fair enough because the kid was born into a war and it has not stopped.
Yeah.
But in this case, like, Dudley is also having a growing up moment of realizing, like, oh, okay, other people's internal experience is similar to my own on occasion, and asks about Harry's safety and Harry's preferences and experiences. So it's a little bit sweet. I found it to be completely sweet, even though, you know, again, as we kind of watch Harry, like, do his final walkthrough of the house, we'll be reminded, you know, of all of the traumas leveraged against him throughout.
Yeah, how bad it was.
Yeah.
So Dudley goes on to say, you saved my life. And Harry corrects him, saying, well, actually, I didn't save your life. It was just your soul. Which, like, just take the compliment, take the nice words. Don't freaking mansplain to him how dementors work. Just
awkward and not wanting to accept any, like, credit, which I kind of understand. But he also realizes, to his credit, that the cup of cold tea that he stepped on earlier that morning wasn't actually a booby trap as he thought, but that Dudley might have wanted to, you know, just make him a little more comfortable, which is kind of touching.
Yeah, it's a nice gesture, but could have been a lot better. I get that Dudley was shy about it, but, you know, probably would have helped if he knocked on the door and said, hey, I made you tea, and not just leave it for Harry to step on. So Petunia is very proud of Dudley for saying thank you, you. Hestia butts in and says, he never actually said thank you. He just said that he didn't think Harry was a waste of space. And Harry says, yeah, but for Dudley, that's like saying I love you.
Which fair.
Is so great. So good. So Dudley then goes over to shake Harry Potter's hand. And Harry says, blimey, did the Dementors blow a new personality into you? And Dudley says, dunno, see ya, Harry. And it's just, aw, this is where my heart turned away from stone, because I have a natural inclination to despise Dursley chapters. And while I was reading this, I just thought, oh, come on, do we really need this? But at this interaction, I really liked it and I felt sweet. So I grinched up and my heart grew 3 sizes. So they say goodbye, and it seems like Petunia wants to say something to Harry, but then she turns around and doesn't. And that might be the last we ever see of the Dursleys, but that's the end of chapter 3. And then we move on to chapter 4, The Seven Potters, which my first thought was, he's not gonna Horcrux himself. Thankfully, he doesn't. Hey, yo, pass Mike, chill, because it's time for Wingardium Adridosa. Today's episode of Potterless is brought to you by Skillshare. When you're trying to learn a new skill, don't you wish that someone who is really skilled in that skill could share their knowledge about that skill so that you could in turn become skilled? Well, you're in luck, because that's what Skillshare does. Skillshare is an online learning community for creators with over 25,000 classes in subjects such as photography and film, technology, business, and more. I just signed up for Skillshare using skillshare.com/potterless. I'm not exaggerating. It took me 18 and a half seconds, and I was already starting a course, which I'm very excited about, called Real Productivity, Create Your Ideal Week, which is hosted by the CEO and founder of Skillshare. How perfect! I really needed this one, because now that Potterless is weekly, I really need to be more productive so that I can, you know, sleep and stuff. So this course has been really helpful so far, and I'm really excited to take more and more. Skillshare is great because they have so many classes. You can take them whenever you want since it's online, and you don't have to pay by the class like college was. Wasn't that some bonkers shit that when you went to college, you had to pay by the class? Ridiculous. Absurd. Skillshare doesn't do that. And if you want to save even more money, go to skillshare.com/potterless. And when you sign up, you get 2 free months of classes, and you can try out as many classes as you want. There's so many amazing ones. I am so excited to continue my knowledging journey with Skillshare, and I hope you do the same. So again, go to skillshare.com/potterless, and you'll get 2 free months of people sharing their skills with you. And now you'll hear words from a few sponsors who make it feasible for me to be a full-time podcaster. Some of these ads will be read by me, others of them won't. The ones that aren't are inserted locally, so if you live internationally, don't be surprised if you hear an ad in your country's native language. And once those ads are complete, we'll get back to this episode of Potterless.
This episode of Potterless is brought to you by Arena Club. Now, if you listen to this podcast, it should be no secret that I am both a sports nerd and more of a traditional nerd. And when you think of these two types of nerddom, there's one thing that links them together, and that is card collecting. Whether you are looking to buy, trade, sell, or display a card collection of sports cards or Pokemon cards, you should check out Arena Club. ArenaClub.com is the place where you can do all of these things. I have recently made a purchase on the marketplace. I got Lieutenant Surge's Raichu, which is my favorite Pokemon, and I didn't even know that there was a Lieutenant Surge version of the Raichu. So that is a card that I now have, and it's not just some digital thing. I can have this card physically mailed to me. So there's bunch of cool stuff you can do with Arena Club, including their slab packs. If you have ever done any sort of card collecting, you know that ripping packs or repacks can be a zero transparency type of thing where you're just hoping you get some sort of cool card. But what's nice about the slab packs with Arena Club is that you have full transparency. You see what available cards are there, what your percentage of getting them is, what the gradings are. So it is not a complete black box. You're going into this knowing what cards you might get. And I've been using Arena Club, and it's pretty cool. It's very easy for me to look up different cards. I can favorite them, see what I want, and then whenever I want them shipped to me, I can get them shipped to me, and then I'll have the physical versions of them. Right now, you can get 10% off your first purchase by going to arenaclub.com/potterless. Wow, that is a wild offer. 10% off a $400 slab pack is $40 right there. Anyways, that's arenaclub.com/potterless for 10% off your first purchase. So if you want to collect some cards or rip open some packs in a more transparent way, whether you're a sports nerd or a Pokemon nerd or all sorts of nerds like me, you can use Arena Club today.
Seeking the truth never gets old. Introducing June's Journey, the free-to-play mobile game that will immerse you in a thrilling murder mystery. Join June Parker as she uncovers hidden objects and clues to solve her sister's death in a beautifully illustrated world set in the roaring 20s. With new chapters added every week, the excitement never ends. Download June's Journey now on your Android or iOS device, or play on PC through Facebook Games.
Harry takes his rucksack, his firebolt, and Hedwig, and gets ready to leave. He does kind of the tour through the Dursley household, and it's just a laundry list of all the bad stuff that has happened.
Yeah, before we get there, though, Harry does have one moment of watching the Dursleys leave in their car down Privet Drive. Mm-hmm. And in my final moment of probably over-textual analysis for this episode, we see that the windows burned scarlet for a moment in the now setting sun before the car disappears, by which I mean drives away. It will later disapparate. But I thought that, again, choice of the word scarlet was really resonant. Again, the cover looks like a sunset in a little bit of a way, which is kind of cool. This is the sunset of the chapter of Harry's relationship in this way with the Dursleys, of his time in this house. Like, this is all kind of like things are ending.
They are literally riding off into the sunset.
Exactly. And I was also reminded, though, there of Fox, which, was always described in very like sunset-y, ruby red, scarlet.
Yeah, amber tones.
Right. And I don't know, to me, it sort of reminded me that like the only way that Harry could have a functional relationship with his family and his place of origin is to kind of sacrifice what came before. And out of this tragedy, maybe a new bond or a potential for one is going to be reborn. So we will have to see.
Yeah, we will. So a bunch of wizards then lift their disillusionment charms and appear. You've got Hagrid on a motorcycle, and you've got a bunch of others on brooms and thestrals. So the whole crew that is there is Hermione, Ron, Mad-Eye Moody, Fred and George, Bill, Mr. Weasley, Tonks, Lupin, Fleur, Kingsley, and Mundungus. What I found interesting is that J.K. Rowling gives little descriptors of everybody, but only describes their hair. So it's like Ron and his orange hair, and Bill with his longer hair, and Tonks with her bright pink hair, and Hagrid with his hair and big beard. I was like, why do we care so much about everybody's hair?
Maybe it's priming us to see them all be identical, which could be kind of funny.
Okay.
But I don't know, like just kind of looking around at all of them as he takes them into the kitchen was really sweet. Like it's, I think, really lovely to see again, this house is like completely vacated and it was for the most part a super shitty place to grow up. Mm-hmm. But now Harry is filled with like friends and allies who are here to like literally put their lives on the line for him, which I don't know, it's pretty sweet.
Mm-hmm. So one of the first things Harry does is ask Kingsley, what about the Muggle Prime Minister? And Kingsley says, he can do one night without me. You're more important. Right after this, Tonks flashes her ring at Harry and says, hey, Harry, like, check it out. And says that they got married. Sorry you couldn't be there. It was a very small and quiet service. So I think that that's pretty cute that she just kind of busts the news with no real reason. Just kind of like, hey, check it. Then Moody gets into what's going on with this plan. So they had to abandon plan A because of Pius. So the problem that they face is that with Harry being underage, the ministry still has a trace on him. So Moody clarifies the protection charm situation, saying that once they get far enough out of the house, it's going to go away. They're doing it early to try to catch the Death Eaters off guard, and they purposely let out a fake trail that they weren't leaving until the 30th. So Snape was right, Yaxley was wrong, and he fell for the bait. But here's my question, just because I know that Snape is at least on the side of the Order, I'm very intrigued about Snape's motivations in terms of what he decides to tell Voldemort and the Death Eaters, and when he is right, and when he tries to lead them astray. And I feel like this is something that I'm confused as to why, if Snape is good, that he gave them the correct thing and didn't just let him take the bait, if Snape's ultimate goal is to kill Voldemort and, you know, have Harry survive. I was very perplexed that Snape would go through the effort of correcting them when really he could have just let it all happen where they fall for this bait and then they can just be like, oh no, we messed up.
Yeah, you're supposed to be confused.
Okay, good.
And like the,
I mean, I wish I didn't know that he was good in the end. I really, really do, because I talked about this in previous episodes, but I think that given the end of six, even if I didn't know Snape was a good guy, I would have thought that he was good just based on Dumbledore saying Severus, Severus, please, when he got killed. So to me, that seems very much like a we've talked about this situation before contingency plan type deal. So if I didn't know Snape was good in the end, when I was reading this and you learn that Snape is going through the effort to make sure they try to attack Harry on the right night, I would have been way more confused and less confident in my decision on whether or not he's evil, because this seems like a golden opportunity to kind of let Harry be safe, and then you can just throw your hands up in the air and say, oh, we tried.
Yeah, I mean, it's the classic like double agent conundrum where you have an ultimate goal, but you also have to appear to be willing to like go all the way to make that goal not happen for the other side.
Mm-hmm.
So the like more substantial the stuff that Snape does give to Voldemort, the more presumably believable his case is going to be, which is why I thought it was so significant that in the first chapter, Yaxley asks Snape, are you confident? Like, how you think it's going to go? Like, how's your reception going to be? Because it seems like airtight, right? Like, Snape just killed Dumbledore, or Dumbledore is dead. And in any case, we don't know exactly what Voldemort knows or thinks happened that night.
Sure.
But yeah, it's, again, stakes are raising. Like, that is the refrain of the first bit of this book.
Yeah. So basically what the Order has done is they've charmed the heck out of everybody's house, so it isn't clear which one they're planning on putting Harry in. Harry is supposed to go to Tonks' parents' house, which, is that really the best choice since she kind of has family ties to Death Eaters? I feel like Kingsley's house would have been a good call.
Well, you also have to think about it from a Death Eater's point of view. What is the most obvious house? You know, like to me, when I heard that their ultimate destination was the Burrow, I was like, oh, fuck, that's a bad choice, because that's obviously where Harry Potter's going to go.
Uh-huh.
You know, so I think choosing someone who is, you know, kind of on the periphery and maybe even, you know, has ties to the dark side, like that's not an obvious choice for Harry to go to. So from this perspective, like Mad-Eye Moody is good at what he does. And this whole idea of, you know, using the kind of multiple leads to like send people to multiple places, I think is super smart. Listen, diversification is good in life, it is good in investing, and it is good in, you know, sneaking Harry Potter out of Privet Drive.
And it's also good in terms of human beings, Voldemort.
Yes, exactly.
So Harry brings up the point, aren't they going to notice when we all go to the same house? And Moody reveals no, because there will be 7 Harry Potters tonight, which, what? So Moody brings out some, what I assume is Polyjuice Potion. They don't actually name it, but then eventually they use it.
In half a dozen egg cup size glasses, which caused me to shout, shot, 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 shot.
A very good note. So yeah, arguably not one of the more enjoyable shots, but probably still better than, I'm trying to think of like, what's the worst alcohol to get as a shot?
Ooh.
That people actually do? Because like, do people shoot gin? That would be horrible.
That sounds very bad.
Yeah.
Yeah, people shoot fire.
Fireball,
which sounds like fire whiskey, so maybe that would be it.
Yeah, Fireball's fine. It's just like so sugary and gross. It's just like the worst version of some of the other ones, like Jack Daniel's Fire or whatever. But yeah, Fireball's, at least it's sugary enough where it's okay. I don't know. Yeah, shooting gin probably would be the last place.
Hermione does point out that Harry's Polyjuice looks much better.
We're going to discuss that at length later. I have many questions about that.
All right.
So Moody brings out this Polyjuice potion. Harry's not feeling it. He knows what this plan is going to be, and he's not okay with it. Hermione knew that this would happen, that he would react this way. And Harry says he doesn't want people risking their lives for him. And Ron hits him with right, because this is the first time any of us have done that.
Fair enough, Ron.
Which is great. Fred then kills it by saying, quote, well, none of us really fancy it, Harry. Imagine if something went wrong and we were stuck as specky, scrawny gits forever. Harry does not laugh at this. I laughed at this. Harry says, well, you can't do it if I don't like it because you need my hair. And George says, well, that's that. Plan scuppered. And this brings us to another edition of British Quandaries with UK correspondent Dottie James to see if people actually say the word scuppered.
And now it is time for British Quandaries with UK correspondent Dottie James.
For something to be scuppered, it means you've been foiled again. Your plans have been ruined. You've lost the opportunity to fulfill what you were going to do. You've been scuppered. Apparently it comes from originally the intention to deliberately sink a ship. But we use it every day in terms of, ruined, foiled. Ah, gosh, darn it, but scuppered again. That kind of thing. But a lot less piratey and a lot more English.
This has been British Quandaries with UK correspondent Dottie James.
And wow, look at that. We learned the answer to the question on everybody's mind.
Who knew?
So Moody says that they will resort to force if they need to, because Moody's here and he's got the plan and he's not messing around. Moody says that it is the best plan given the circumstances because, quote, even you-know-who can't split himself into seven and then Harry and Hermione catch eyes for a brief moment and then look away from each other.
Yeah.
Which I think is great.
I know.
So good. Oh, so amazing. Harry then gives in after Moody yells about it and Ron hits him with a just do it look. So Harry says, okay, fine. Hermione, as you mentioned, notes that Harry's polyjuice potion, after they mix in the hair and stuff, looks much tastier than Crab and Goyle's, which first she says, you look much tastier than Crab and Goyle, which she even blushes and realizes, oh, you know what I mean, and then cites that Goyle's look like boogers. But here's my question. Is this actually how polyjuice potion works? Like, if you are less gross of a person, it tastes better?
I don't know. They also brewed that when they were 13. Or 12.
Yeah.
So it
they
could
might have
be
just been bad at it.
Exactly. That despite Hermione's like prowess and all things that she puts her mind to, except for flirting, you know, she did not maybe make polyjuice in the smoothest way that Mad-Eye Moody, who's been doing this shit for a long, long time, has.
Yeah.
It's like Rowling's whole view of the world is so stark. You know, like people's character is inherent to them and like finds a way out. Like that's the kind of whole premise of the like moral view of these books is like you can tell how a person really is truly down deep inside. And sometimes that is, you know, reflected in their actions. But other times you can tell like they smell bad or their magic is gross or like they're coded.
Or
in,
they're ugly. So exactly. They can't be good at magic,
exactly.
Which I have a problem with.
So, I mean, I get it again as like a device of children's books initially that, you know, someone's outsides can occasionally betray their insides mm-hmm. or demonstrate them. But it made me kind of smile and roll my eyes like, oh, this is the Harry Potter that we know, you know, the Harry Potter mm-hmm. set of books where everybody is alliterative and bad people look gross.
Exactly.
I might lose this lens as we go through the book, but for now I'm kind of like, oh, classic Harry, classic Harry Potter, classic JK.
Yep, very classic JK. So Ron, Hermione, Fred, George, and Fleur line up, and they're one short of the seven. So Hagrid just picks up Mundungus and puts him in line. So then, such a great moment where Fred and George turn to each other and say together, wow, we're identical, which is first hilarious, but I found more hilarious when in my brain, the situation before this took place was Fred and George are getting ready to go. And while they're getting ready, one of them turns to the other and goes, hey, you know what's going to be really funny? When we do the polyjuice thing and we look like Harry, what if we said this? And then the other one goes, oh, fuck yeah, dude, that's hilarious.
Nah, man, it's twin synergy. That's how twins work. All twins all over the place, every time.
It's so great. After saying this, Fred one-ups it by saying, I don't know, though. I still think I'm better looking. And Fleur then says, Bill, don't look at me. I'm hideous. Which, a classic Fleur, to always be concerned with looks and nothing else.
I don't know. I kind of like Ron's line the best, which is...
I have a problem with it.
Really?
Yeah. Well, so Ron says, I knew Ginny was lying about the tattoo, which... Ron is roommates with Harry Potter for the past 6 years, and they've been on the Quidditch team for the past couple years.
He's
never seen Harry without his shirt on, or Harry Potter, who tells Ron literally everything at the beginning of the chapters. He tells Ron everything. I feel like if Harry got a big old tattoo of a hippogriff on his chest, he probably would have told Ron Weasley.
Ron could have been kidding. It's a fun moment. Let them have fun, Shubes. Let them have fun.
I do. It just baffles me because I hoped he was kidding, but it doesn't sound like he was kidding. I can only hope that this is a joke because if it's not, it baffles me and boggles my mind.
But listen, it's a fun scene. It's a fun idea.
Yes, it is a very fun scene. It's a very fun.
Extremely cinematic in the way that I think that Harry Potter's wanted to see Dan Radcliffe have to do, you know, seven of himself in the same room acting wise. But it's a good scene in the movies. It's a good scene in the book. And Polyjuice Potion is violent as fuck. Like the description of this transformation is scary. Features are bubbling and distorting like hot wax as Hermione and Fuller's hair shoots backward into their skulls like old timey dolls. You'd be able to like pull their mm-hmm. ponytails and you can make the hair.
Yeah.
You know, retract.
Yep.
Terrifying stuff of nightmares. Thank you.
So the plan is for Mundungus and Moody to pair up and go by broom. Arthur and Fred to pair up and go by broom. But there's this great moment when Moody calls on Fred. He goes, I'm George. You can't even tell us apart when we look like Harry. And then he goes, okay, sorry, George. And then he goes, no. I'm just pulling your wand. I'm actually Fred. And he's like, you go with him. And then you, the other one, whoever you are, you go with Remus by broom. So very fun moment there. Fred and George, so good.
It's really smart, though, to diversify away again in this way that, you know, the Death Eaters probably will expect Harry to be on Broom because that's his one thing.
Yes.
So it's smart.
Very smart indeed. So the rest of the pairings is Bill and Fleur on a Thestral and Hermione and Kingsley by Thestral, and then Tonks and Ron by Broom as well. Then that leaves Harry with Hagrid, which I think is a bit of a bad call because that seems like the obvious choice.
Yeah.
Like if I was the Death Eaters, that easily would have been my first guess is who are they going to make him fly with? How about the half giant in the motorcycle? Like that seems too obvious to me.
Me too.
I would have, I tried to think of who I would pick because it's hard because he's close to everyone. I feel like Bill would have been the best call.
Yeah, they haven't had a lot of.
Because he doesn't actually have that much of a connection.
Exactly.
Once I read this, I did not have high hopes for this plan, which as we will learn, doesn't really go smoothly. So Moody says that they chose this plan, as you mentioned, because they are assuming that Death Eaters will think Harry will be on a broom because he's very good at it, which that makes sense. So this is another part of the plan that I'm not very keen on, is Harry takes his stuff, his rucksack, the Hedwig cage, and the firebolt, and kind of shoves them into the sidecar by his feet, which I don't think this is good because I don't imagine this being perfectly hidden. So if any of the Death Eaters see something sticking out of the sidecar, they'll know it's him. And it just seems like it's extra cumbersomeness to have. I don't know what better way they can do it. I don't know if they can make the stuff teleport or move, because didn't they make their stuff like fly to Hogwarts on their own accord in the past? I just feel like this is a weird element of the plan, and we will learn that two of the three things don't survive the journey, so I feel like they probably should have done something else here.
Yeah, I knew from the, obviously I knew because I'd read it before, but the serious nostalgia makes it especially a red flag that something is about to go wrong because we have been thinking fondly of Sirius and Harry doesn't get to have anything nice.
No, he does not. So Hagrid says that Arthur tricked out the motorcycle with some gadgets. I'm very hyped to see those in action. And when they are used, they're very fun.
Also, not a great sign.
I mean, yeah, not a great sign, but I knew it was going to make for entertaining effects no matter what, whether they worked well or horribly. In particular of these gadgets, though, is a purple button that they don't say what it is, but Arthur mentions that it is not ready and probably should not be used. So I knew that was going to be very fun.
I just wrote NOS in my notes.
Yep, that's basically what it becomes. So they leave and they don't get very far and become surrounded by Death Eaters almost immediately. So the Death Eaters do what they always do, which is they just start shooting Avada Kedavras all over the place because they don't care about anything. And at one point, Hagrid does a barrel roll of sorts with the motorcycle, and everything that Harry has put in the sidecar starts to fall out, which I thought this was very dumb. The firebolt just falls all the way down, and Harry is able to grab the rucksack and the cage before they do, though. But doesn't really matter that much because once he grabs the cage, Hedwig is hit with an Avada Kedavra.
Oh, Hedwig.
I didn't know that Hedwig dies. I get that people like her. And this is probably a hot take, but like, why do people like Hedwig? Like, Hedwig didn't really do anything except bite Harry sometimes when he didn't use her for letters and stuff. I've just always imagined Hedwig to be like kind of sassy, and I don't understand why people... I was waiting for some big moment where Hedwig was like really cool and stuff or did something redeemable like Dobby. People were very upset when I was anti-Dobby, and now I understand why, because he's so good. People were also upset when I was anti-Hedwig, but I don't know. What did Hedwig ever do?
Yeah, you know, looking back, she was really just Harry's first friend.
Okay.
And she was also the one, like, companion and, like, living creature he had to talk to during the summers when he was back at Privet Drive. So I think this was part of the, like, emotional experience of reading Harry Potter, A, as a child, where, like, it would be fucking cool to have a bird as a pet.
Yeah,
come on, that, awesome.
Yeah, exactly. I can see it from the child perspective and from a pet lover perspective, where I can understand the if someone had a pet for 6 years and then it died thing. But I guess my confusion just lied in that the books, we didn't actually ever learn that much about Hedwig, except she was there a lot from the beginning.
Yeah, I mean, and I think it was definitely more, you know, symbolic and representative than just, you know, her doing cool things, even though I think she did have a very cool personality. She was really Harry's first physical sign that he was actually a wizard.
Yeah,
you know, like Hagrid brought him a cake. Okay, great. They went into Diagon Alley where he's wearing like shitty clothes. Great. But then like he gets an owl that is just his, and like in a life where like every single thing was a hand-me-down and he was otherwise buying like school books and whatever, which are also cool, but like Hedwig was,
it's different to have a pet,
was like the first good thing to happen to him ever.
Yeah, and I guess it kind of signifies his connection of his childhood, where
exactly
that was something he had from the beginning, and it's been his tie the positive tie to Privet Drive and his childhood and stuff like that. And now that's kind of gone.
Yeah. And especially during the summer, she was his only like tie to the outside world, mm-hmm. like whether it was, you know, bringing mail or not bringing mail or like sitting there retreats being like, come on, let's go outside, you know, depressive mess. It definitely, in my opinion, is less like sadness at a character that I like dying, but more my empathy for Harry as he sees this like maybe final death knoll of his childhood in his, you know, beloved pet going in such a terrible manner.
Yeah, you definitely make the good point that when it's the summer and he's at the Dursleys and he can't use magic, that is his only tie to the magical world because he's not allowed to do anything else. So Hedwig, in a way, serves as his beacon of hope and his reminder that, hey, the summer's almost over, you'll be back at school. And she's his connection to friends, whether it's letters, Daily Prophet, etc. So I get it. So yes, I think you're right, is that it's more of being sad for Harry and less Hedwig didn't seem to be anything super important, but I don't know. I guess I understand it more, but I thought that Hedwig was going to have some big thing just based on people's reactions when a couple times earlier in Potterless I mentioned, oh, Hedwig seems really sassy. I don't know that I like Hedwig. And not the fun sassy like Ginny and Fred and George. Right. Like that, I'm going to bite your hand because you're using Pigwidgeon, which was objectively the smarter thing to do to not get the owls intercepted, Hedwig. So, anyway.
Yeah, I hear you. And this for me, I remember exactly like what I felt and where I was when I read this portion of the chapter for the first time, because it was so shocking to me that like Harry can't have even this.
Yeah.
And to me, like, again, I know that lots of like bad crap has happened in the book so far, mm-hmm. and the Dursleys are gone and Harry is moving. And, you know, we saw Voldemort alone to open the book, like seriously mm-hmm. significant stuff. But this to me was like, oh man, this is a war book. And like, here we are. And not everybody is going to make it out.
No, they are not. I'm sure that this is going to be the first death of many, and maybe this is kind of setting the stage where before anyone we really care about dies, it's just this little thing of, you know, you kind of care about Hedwig, get ready. It's almost like a bad appetizer for getting it, because I've not read chapter 5 yet, but the name of it is The Fallen Warrior, so I'm guessing someone didn't survive, and I kind of anticipated that once you see how shit hits the fanny, the plan goes. I was expecting somebody to not make it out alive. I do not know who it is. I fear that it's one of the twins because they're technically the most cool. Like, it's, I hate to say this, but like, they seem like the most expendable because, like, well, there's two of them, but I'm scared that someone is going to be dead that we actually really care about. And maybe this Hedwig thing is kind of setting up like, hey, get ready. This book is serious and it is a war book. There's going to be a bunch of deaths, I'm assuming. People that we've known since day one are going to die. And that is going to be hard. So we'll see who it ends up being. But moving on, four Death Eaters pursue Hagrid and Harry once everybody kind of splits up. Hagrid hits a green button on the motorcycle and a literal brick wall comes out of the exhaust pipe, which I think is funny. One of the four Death Eaters gets hit and another one goes to make sure that they don't plummet to their death. Hagrid then continues to drive, but the other Death Eaters catch up, even the one that went to help this other guy. So then Hagrid hits another button, which a net flies out, but they were ready for something to come out of the rear, so they all dodge. Then Hagrid hits this purple button, which we were not sure about, and we learn that it's the Nos button. Some dragon fire comes out of the back, which first off could harm them, but then also just projects the motorcycle much faster, and they quickly kind of escape in a little bit of hyperspeed, so to speak. The sidecar, though, starts to break away structurally, and Hagrid's like, oh, I'll fix it. And Harry goes, no, because Hagrid is not always the best with magic. He's using, you know, his broken wand and the umbrella, so it's not perfect. And Hagrid tries to use Reparo, but whatever happens with the spell, it makes the sidecar just pop clear off of the motorcycle. So Harry seems like he's going to just start falling to his death, but in the ultimate callback, uses Wingardium Leviosa, which I don't think has been used since that lesson, right?
You would know better than me because I have not read all of the books this as recently as you have. But yeah, that's awesome. I was thinking later in the chapter, like, I can't believe that Expelliarmus plays such a role in combat here.
Yeah.
You know, like, it's such a first year spell, but sometimes you got to go back to basics. And for Harry, it's Reparo, Wingardium Leviosa, and Expelliarmus.
Mm-hmm. And then all of just his various stunning charms. But I mean, Expelliarmus is a good one because, especially if you're flying, it's not like they're on the ground or something where you can try to chase after your wand and pick it up. If you're flying and you drop it, you got to dive bomb to catch it or just keep moving and not have a wand. So I think it's a good choice. But I'll get into the Expelliarmus thing because I'm unsure if that is what gives him away, so to speak, but we'll cover that in a second.
Yeah, I don't know either.
So Harry uses Wingardium Leviosa to kind of keep himself floating. The three Death Eaters then start to approach Harry. He hits one of them, the middle one, with Impedimenta, and just as the other two kind of swerve out of the way so they don't get hit by this frozen body, Hagrid grabs Harry out of the sidecar, which had started to descend, and throws him onto the back of the seat of the motorcycle. So Harry is facing back to back with Hagrid and just throwing stunning spells all over the place. And when he throws one of them, it whizzes by one of the hooded Death Eaters, but by the light of it, he can see that it's Stan Shunpike. And I am sticking with my theory from before that Stan Shunpike is Draco using Polyjuice Potion, because if Draco does stuff, they don't want to see that a kid who's supposed to be a student at Hogwarts is a full-fledged Death Eater. This is still my guess, but the question here is this actually Stan? Because if it is, that means they would have had to get him out of the ministry, because the ministry had him in Azkaban because they made that arrest for him. But we've gotten the vibe from Harry asking Scrimgeour about it. It seems like it's a false arrest that they did just to try to save face. So it's a weird situation. I'm sure we'll learn about it very soon, but I'm sticking to my guns that I think it's Malfoy's disguise so that people don't say, hey, why is this student a Death Eater?
Well, the only clue we get is the description of Stan's face as strangely blank, which is all Harry can make out before he tries to use Expelliarmus again and hears someone yell ominously, "That's him, it's him, it's the real one."
Yeah, so that was my question, because Harry thinks, how did they know? But was it because he used Expelliarmus? I guess if we're going with my theory that this is actually Draco, I guess it would make sense because Harry uses it a lot, but shouldn't it be a spell that everybody uses a lot? It seems like a good spell.
I don't know. The other options, in my opinion, are like, one, it was a real owl compared to other ones that were fake. Like, if they saw, it looks like Hedwig was bloodied. So, like, they could theoretically have seen that it was actually Hedwig, though I think that
did everybody else have a rucksack and a firebolt and an owl
they
with
did.
Them?
They
oh,
did.
Okay,
only
I missed
stuffed
that.
Stuffed owl in a cage.
Okay,
possible. And also just Hagrid yelling Harry, like Hagrid
yeah,
could
by the emotion.
Have had a really good cover, apparently, but, you know, it seemed to me like it's very genuine, so we don't know, and it is scary.
Could it possibly be some sort of, like, legitimacy situation?
I think at this point, we are familiar enough with legitimacy that Harry would have, like, described some kind of prickling
okay.
in his mind. You
sure,
know?
Yeah.
That's that my feeling, but, you know, like it's a possibility. It's not impossible.
Mm-hmm. Okay, cool. Yeah, so we'll have to see later. So Harry tells Hagrid to do the dragonfire thing again, and they do it, and it seems to have worked. But in the brief time when Harry thinks that it has worked, he thinks again, how did Stan know? And just as he's having this thought, Voldemort shows up. And in the most intimidating move possible, he's not on a broom, he's not on a thestral, he's not on a flying motorcycle. He's just floating in the air, which sounds terrifying.
It is fucking terrifying.
He is just floating as high as they are in the sky, which, ugh. I'm very excited to see how the movie did this, because reading this, it was just the crazy action scene description of what goes down.
Yeah.
But basically, Hagrid dives, Harry starts shooting stuns all over the place, the motorbike gets hit at one point, a Death Eater is just about to attack Harry, but then Hagrid jumps out of the motorcycle onto the broom, and then they start to descend because there's too much weight for the broom to hold both of them up. And then Harry hears Avada Kedavra, which I'm assuming comes from Voldemort because he wouldn't want any of the Death Eaters to do it. And Harry closes his eyes. His wand moves on his own accord and spurts out golden fire. So I don't know what this could be or how this works, or if it was just him being instinctual, or if it's actually some sort of, like, divine power or something that is making him do this. Amanda's
I'm just
rocking
smiling
back and
like
forth.
A maniac over here.
Okay. So
we don't know.
Okay. After this, Harry opens his half-closed eyes and realizes he's right near the dragon button. So he hits it with his non-wand hand.
And this is described, by the way, as Harry found his nose an inch from the dragonfire button. I really thought he was gonna lean forward and boop the button
it?
With his
yeah.
nose, which would have been fucking legendary.
Oh, that would have been so good.
Give me a little boop of dragonfire, babe. Come on.
Oh, it'd be so boop. boop. Oh, it would have been so adorable. Unfortunately, he uses his non-wand hand to punch the button, and he breaks away from Voldemort and whatever Death Eater is still there. He is then falling to the ground and tries to do Accio Hagrid, which, of course, does nothing.
Hilarious. So pure.
Yeah, it's great.
I thought Accio Horcrux was the best that we'd ever heard.
Oh, that was so funny.
But I think Accio Hagrid has to be even better.
Yeah, because at least Accio Horcrux kind of worked, and Dumbledore let him do it just to prove a point. But I think Accio Hagrid is a great... Why not? It's like when you're playing a video game and you do something dumb that you know shouldn't work, but you give it a shot anyway. Can I jump through this? You just try it knowing it's probably not going to work, but maybe. Or like if you're playing Scrabble or Words with Friends specifically, and you can just try a word when you have like a little two-letter connector thing, like maybe Q-O is a word, and then it's not. But Q-I is. Shout out to Chi for being the most important word in my Words with Friends career, which lasted from my freshman year of college to my sophomore year in college.
What a throwback.
Oh, so good.
Pre-Vine Shubes was Words with Friends Shubes.
Yeah, pretty much, because Vine kind of became a thing my sophomore year. So yeah, that was pre. Harry tries Accio Hagrid, does not work. Worth a shot. Can't blame him. But then he hears Voldemort say to a Death Eater, "Your wand, Selwyn? Give me your wand." We haven't heard of Selwyn before, right? This is the first name drop?
No, we have not.
Okay, it was not a name I recognized. And Voldemort is right there, like right by Harry. But then he vanishes, and Harry realizes he's getting close to hitting the ground. He sees Hagrid spread eagle on the ground, and Harry does not have enough time to pull up on the motorbike to get it to float. So he just has enough time to kind of swerve it away from Hagrid, and then it crashes into a pond. And that is the end of this scenario fight situation thing and the end of the chapter. Was there anything I missed? Is there anything I misconstrued? I feel like there's so many things happening and I wanted an explanation, but I didn't know if it was just they will explain it in the next chapter or what. But a lot is happening.
A lot is happening. The only thing I heard was when we were discussing why Harry had to leave Privet Drive now, there are kind of two things going on. One is the trace, and then one is the like protection that Harry has on him. So the trace is the Ministry of Magic's trace on all underage users of magic. Uh-huh. That won't be expiring for 4 days until he turns 17.
Yeah.
But also the kind of like range that Moody talked about is like, oh, once we're out of range,
yes,
means once Harry is far enough away from Privet Drive that his mom's like place of residence protection, you know, is going to be wearing off. So the trace is still on him. If and when he uses all of this magic, obviously he is in the wind and the Ministry's alarms are presumably going off. But at this point, again, it doesn't matter if he's arrested, but we suppose that they were worried about someone at the Ministry like being able to like operate right next to him, you know, and like know where Harry is.
Yeah.
So in this case, both are kind of moot and Harry is in the wind with Hagrid lying below him, sadly and ironically, just like Dumbledore was at the end of book six.
Yes. Now here's a thought I just had. If they knew that the Dursleys were going to have to move, what if at the beginning of the summer, before Harry goes back, the Dursleys have moved into a mobile home. And then that is established that this is the home and that's where the blood is and it's okay. And then Harry spends an entire summer in a mobile home and then they just drive him to someone else's house and then all he has to do is walk from one to the other. Why didn't they do this?
Well, somebody also earlier or in chapter three mentioned the sort of intent where they were like, okay, so the Dursleys are leaving, right? For the last time, right? And you don't intend to go habitate again, right? So that made me kind of put a little question mark in the margin because like, what does intent have to do with it? Like we don't know. Obviously, there's a lot of like intention, emotion wrapped up in magic, especially in like huge protections like Lily's. Mm-hmm. But it just made me laugh. Like, how do people know if it matters? Like how do you draw the line? It's almost like saying, you know, like intent is 9/10 of the law or whatever, or possession is 9/10 of the law. I don't know what the thing is, but just brings to mind for me how squishy and non-defined all of this stuff really is.
Yeah.
So especially where like, again, like we are in the book where like prophecies will be true or not, you know, Horcruxes will be destroyed or not, Hallows, whatever those are, like we'll learn
they will be definitely
what that mythos is all about. And this is the point where like all of the world building that Rowling has done or not over the last six books, like we know the rules that we're playing by, you know what I mean? And like, this is the book where we finally figure out if A squared plus B squared equals C squared. Like if 2 + 2 equals 4.
Where all of the building comes together.
Yeah. Yeah. And so this is where we're at.
Yeah. There's one thing that I don't know if I'm looking forward to it or not, because Johnny, who was on the episodes before yours, at the end of the sixth book, mentions that apparently somewhere in the seventh book, there is some sort of thing that is very, very minor. And he said that there's two of them in close succession to each other. It's like very, very minor. And it's this technicality, kind of like a thing. And he is predicting that I am going to be absolutely furious about it. And he's predicted that everyone listening knows what I'm talking about. So I don't know if that makes you think of a particular thing, but just kind of speaking of trying to think about intent and world building and things coming together that J.K. Rowling has laid the foundation for, and then seeing whether or not it comes together and works. I fear slash am excited to see what it is, just because I do know that some of the fun elements of Potterless are me getting upset about stuff.
I know. I feel like I didn't give you enough room to be your sassy and upset self.
No, I mean, there's not that much going on in these chapters that make me sassy or upset. As you can see, there is no Quidditch. I mean, the Firebolt dies in this chapter. How am I supposed to be sad?
Apparently the weight limit of a broom is less than one Hagrid, so that's
or it's at least it's just Hagrid plus a person, so it might be equal to one Hagrid. The weight limit is not enough for a Hagrid and another person.
Do you think tandem brooms are a thing? Like tandem bicycles?
They should be. Oh my, how cute.
Do you think there are like baby seats on brooms, or is it just like the
chest
carrier?
Oh my goodness. Oh, wow. This is a whole new world of possibilities.
We know there are toddler brooms that have little like levitation charms and cushions to keep them from falling, but that really is like, what do couples do?
Do children's brooms have training wheels where they have tiny little things of straw like on the side of the back of the straw? So they're coming
very
out.
Very close.
Oh, my
They have little like levitation charms where the kids can't fall off.
Oh, okay. Well, that's cute. I hope they physically manifest themselves in tiny little straw parts that stick out of the side.
I know. I think that would be very, like a little manger. Adorable.
In my headcanon, that's how they are. But yeah, so that is the end of this chapter. And that's the end of this episode of Potterless. I am very scared about the next one being that someone that we like is dead.
We'll see.
But Amanda, how do you feel about chapters 3 and 4 from the seventh book?
Yeah, like I said earlier, I remember like how I felt and how I was laying when I first read this chapter in what would have been my freshman year of high school. Mm-hmm. It was such a, like Harry had been younger than me for all of the books so far, but we are the same age. In the book when it was published, almost, I guess. I guess I was, 15 and he was turning 17, but we were very close and closer than we'd been. I don't know, for me, it was such a moment of like, damn, like, I don't know how I would react. In previous books and chapters, it's like, Harry's such an idiot. I would have done this so much better, blah, 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 blah. Mm-hmm. But here, there is like, there is combat, there is loss, there is like jumping into the unknown. Mm-hmm. And yeah, it's it is all going to hit off after this, including the sort of like the formula is gone. Like mm-hmm. we were in Privet Drive briefly. We have left, like all bets are off. We're not on the Hogwarts Express right now. And so it's so cool to me that like here in the seventh book, you picture like, I don't know, I'm just looking at my bookshelf now with all seven of the books next to each other. And the fact that we're like inching through the final one in that volume mm-hmm. and already things are so far off the rails. It's, I don't know. It's just, it's a very cool and like emotional thing to consider as we, again, sort of set off on this final journey of the series.
Yeah. 4 chapters in, we are in a very different place than any other book has been. And it's kind of breaking down all of the norms aside from having a Dursley chapter. It kind of is breaking down all the norms of what usually happens. We've gotten 2 instances of Voldemort already. Usually we only get Voldemort in the very end of the book or briefly. We've already had 2 of them, and we've gotten the Voldemort perspective chapter where it's not narrated by Harry, and then we have Voldemort somewhat trying to attack Harry but not necessarily being successful. So that's different. I do not know if Harry is actually going to go to school this year, which is very different. And even what was going to be set up as you go through the sixth book, when you read the Horcrux chapter, at least what I expected, the foundation is that, okay, so the next book, 7, is going to be Harry and Dumbledore going together and having these kind of meetings where Dumbledore theorizes on what the Horcrux is, and then they go to find the Horcrux, and then they get the Horcrux and they destroy it, and they'll do that 4 times, and that'll be the book. Well, with Dumbledore gone, even the one type of thing that we thought was going to be the key or the hint as to what the structure of the book will be and how the story is formatted, even that is gone. So I'm in a very interesting place where four chapters in, things are very different, and I have no freaking clue how the story is going to go, where it is going to go, how it's going to be told, all these other things. I'm very excited.
Yeah, and neither does Harry, right?
Like, nope,
this is also the first time he is leaving Privet Drive, not for somewhere to chill before the Hogwarts Express. Mm-hmm. I'm just like, the way I experience books is so like empathetic and drawn to the character. So that is definitely something to keep in mind here as well. It's like, just as we don't know what's next and we feel, you know, unmoored without the structure that we're used to, so does Harry. And like, he also pictured himself, you know, hunting down Horcruxes, being a badass with Dumbledore. Mm-hmm. But now he's sort of like, there's so many moments where at the end of Half-Blood Prince, like, people are sort of looking around for answers and they're like, oh, Dumbledore isn't here. Like, what do we then do? And so we're going to see Harry try and fail and succeed and, you know, who knows what, but try to kind of fill those shoes. And it's like a moment in video games where like you realize that the world is open, or you realize that the map is bigger than you thought it was.
Yeah.
And this is that for me. It's like, you thought you were on a train track, but mm-hmm. not only is your train car now off of the tracks, like, you look backward, the tracks aren't there anymore. And oh, wait, I'm falling. Like, there's no train car under me.
Yeah.
So this is where we're at. And I think it's a pretty cool place to, you know, to leave you for the rest of your journey.
Yeah. Oh man, I'm very excited. Well, Amanda, thank you so much for being on these episodes. I'm glad that my choice to have you at the very beginning of seven worked out. I always talk about how it seems like the stars align when I pick the guests for the chapters, but I had an inkling that having you for the very beginning of seven would make a lot of sense, so you can be my primer into this book, because in a lot of ways I feel like you were a primer for me into the series since you were a guest. Aww. So early on back. So it's good to have you back. I hope people enjoyed these episodes. I'm sure they did. And yeah, I'm excited. So thanks for joining. Listeners, thanks for listening. Is there anything in particular you'd like to mention? Last time you mentioned my podcast, how about you talk about one of yours and stop being so selfless all the time?
Yeah, thank you. If people are eagerly awaiting next week's episode of Potterless and they cannot believe that they waited 2 weeks for episodes, much less 1 week for episodes, I have good news for you, which is that there's over 90 episodes of Spirits that you can download mm-hmm. and binge, where if you like, you know, me thinking way too hard about minor details in a children's book, you're going to love me thinking way too hard about mythology and folklore and urban legends with my best friend. So that podcast is called Spirits, and I think you guys would super enjoy that, as well as Join the Party,
oh, yeah.
which is a story, which is like 32 chapters and counting, that I tell with my friends, all of whom have been on Potterless before, but we tell the story of some unlikely heroes figuring out the world around them, watching the like world map of the video game unfold. It is beautiful and lovely, mm-hmm. and there are many, many hours of it to binge in between your Potterless eps. So let's Join the Party and Spirits. So check it out.
Yeah, and I've been on both of those as well. So if you like me, you can find the ones that I'm in there as well. But yeah, those are both wonderful. No, they're absolutely wonderful podcasts. I cannot recommend them enough. I'm very glad that they are in our little multitude fam, because they're very enjoyable to listen to. So Amanda, thanks for being on. Listeners, thanks for listening. And until next time, as they say in the wizarding world of Harry Potter, before they hit their dragon NOS buttons on their motorcycles, wizard on!
If weekly Potterless still isn't enough to scratch your Harry Potter itch, why don't you check out our Potterless fancy private Facebook group? If you go to facebook.com/potterless and go to groups, you'll find it. And there's so many great discussions and people sharing pictures of violently purple things or crenellated ramparts. It's fantastic. So again, if you go to facebook.com/potterless, you'll find it there. Potterless is created by Mike Schubert. It is hosted by Mike Schubert. It is edited by Mike Schubert. It is produced by Mike Schubert, as well as Leanne Davis, Vicky Garcia, Aaron Johnson, Erica and Calvin Bauer, Sadie Baird, Jesse Horgan, Natalie Klobuchar, Deborah Wilkins, Klaus Sirlopu, Alex Stark, Rebecca Ademick, Frank Chiodo, Marchismo, Tori Larsick, Samantha Rose, Juan Sanfilio, Jenna Dowsett, Kieran Webb, Abita Med, Kaylin Jordan Pontillo, Rosemary Dosh, Jill Boulay, Marie-Lisa C. Keen, Ariel Bird, Romina Rivadeneira, Camille Dock, Anthony Bonarigo, Russell Dunk, Dustin Mullen Cooch, Katie Rogers, Audra Indiana Mercer, Eleanor Curlin, Sydney Cawthorn, Billy Hinton, Rossane Batamana, Micah Cole, Andrea Franz, Nikita Power, Colette Smith, Chrissy Hutton, Trini Nadcat, Lola Palmer, Chelsea Green, Taylor Armstead, Lovekesh Longer, Ali Madsen, Cassandra Aponte, Roxy Chaos, Amelia Krauss, Sean Montag, Jeremiah E. Hurd, Sarah Nink, Jesus J. Morales, Ben Silver, Rachel Guthrie, Zachary Pulido, Jessica Ann, Natalie Jung, Arna Goodna Daughter, Brandy Baldonado, Melody McGinnis, Kristen Chavez, Zach Ross Klein, Elisa Figueroa, Diego Costa, Daisy Carton, Sauter, Jessica Jacob, Orchid Grower, Jonathan Foy, Joe Harrison, Isabel, Steve Trelor, Vivian Santo, Samuel Miner, Victoria Renee, Elena, Takaria Ront, Darlene Ruiz, Drake Perez, James Stepp, Healy Hastings, Marino, Moster, Hannah Shepard, Angelina Withred, Ross Marie Heise, Peter Bemis, Maria Vega, Phineas Ebner, Gardner, Natalie Lozano, Hermione Hoff, Victoria Julian Lee, Ganji Singh, Alex Bisholta, Brian Williams, Caitlin Sullivan, Cecily Togwell, Raul Avila, Finn Stuckey, Mohsin Siddiqui, Grace Riggle, Sammy Curtis, Yarul Pineda, Ingen Oddsdotter, Mary Wynn, Brian Wingate, Heidi Stoll, Alexandra Consulver, John Kotker, Jen and Juice, Seferin Baez, Dusty Nickerim, Noel Basile, Tao, Hala O'Keefe, Emily Tyrell, Michael Russell, Robin Fernandez, Rebecca Shumway, Patricia Colon, Aaron Rapp, Jane Lance, Will Barrington, Neil Fournier, Harper Caldwell, Liz Bigelow, Maria Noah, Brandon Pickens, Vittorio Nicoletta, Sarah Enslin, and Can't I Potter? Web design by Kelly Beckman, and the music is by Bettina Campomanes. If you want to find us on social media, you can go to facebook.com/potterless, twitter.com/potterlesspod, and instagram.com/potterlesspodcast, or reddit.com/r/potterless. For more information on the show, you can go to potterlesspodcast.com, and for bonus content, you can go to patreon.com/potterless. Thank you so much for listening, and until next time, as they say in the wizarding world of Harry Potter, a wizard on!
I'm Victoria Cash. Thanks for calling the Lucky Land Hotline. If you feel like you do the same thing every day, press 1. If you're ready to have some serious fun for the chance to redeem some serious prizes, press 2. We heard you loud and clear. So go to LuckyLandSlots.com right now and play over 100 social casino-style games for free. Get lucky today at LuckyLandSlots.com.
Available to players in the U.S., excluding Washington and Michigan. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply.